Hi, you're listening to Tarot Talk. My name's Renee, and I'm a professional member of the Tarot Guild of Australia, and I will be your host. This is a monthly instalment that we'll be featuring on our website, tarotguild.org.au, and this is a chance for us to interview all of our professional members, interest members, and tarot enthusiasts from around the world. We really hope you enjoy the show, so sit back, relax, get yourself a cup or a glass of wine, and we hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Tarot Talk. This is on behalf of the Tarot Guild of Australia. My name's Renee, and we've got another special guest for you lined up this month. Her name is Breed Barrett, and Breed is a professional member of the Tarot Guild. I'd like to welcome her to the show. She's an accomplished author. She's a professional reader with over 35 years of experience, with an interest in Celtic mysticism. So there's going to be lots to talk about today, and I'm really excited she's decided to join us for the show. So welcome, Breed. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Renee, and thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. I've been following your work for actually quite a long time, and I've been wanting to speak to you as well about what you do and how the Guild has, you know, been supportive over the years. How many members, or how long have you been a member for, a professional?
Well, I'm a professional member for about 2 years, maybe 3 years now. It took me a long time. I really had imposter syndrome, you know. I felt all this time I was reading, it was really important to me to get the recognition from the Tarot Guild because, you know, it's such a respected body. And I was just so grateful with the support I got through the professional journey, you know, as it's a really supportive environment for readers to become professional members. And I've been a member for a long time, on and off, you know, periods of my life where I was able to attend things and when I wasn't, and I had different priorities, but it's very important to me now.
Yeah, totally. And I agree. You know, I'm also a professional member, and we're trying to obviously move the content now into a different offering, which is the podcast. So it's great to be able to talk to people like yourself who are super experienced and have so many different interests. So, look, I just want to start off by maybe getting the listeners to get to know you a little bit better. Now, I'm spotting an accent there. Do you want to give us a bit of background? Where are you from? And tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, look, I'm from Clonmel, which is a town in County Tipperary, Ireland. And it's a, you know, a rural town, about 12,000 people. I grew up there in a strict Irish Catholic family. In fact, I have a brother who's a Franciscan monk and a sister who's a nun. Typical Irish family, although they don't usually have a tarot reader in the mix as well. And I came to Australia when I was 30 with a husband and two children. And since then, I had another child. So I have three adult children now in Australia. And while I love Australia and it's definitely home, the Celtic roots keep tugging at me. You know, I do get homesick now and then. And I'm very attached to the Celtic mysticism, which really lends itself very well to tarot, the symbology and that, and which is why I called my website Danu Celtic Mystery. She's a Celtic goddess, a very strong woman with a lot of power, and she kind of interchanges with Bridget. So when you read the mythology, it's sometimes Bridget and it's sometimes Danu. And my name Breed, that's the Irish for Bridget, so I am a Bridget. And I connect strongly with that. Yeah, so when I came to Australia, I met this amazing medium, Julie Talbot. She's from New Zealand and she lives in England now. And she was the one who encouraged me to get involved in exploring this side. And I started reading tarot first by, you know, reading the book about every card, like most tarot enthusiasts start out. And she eventually made me put the book down and get on with it. So I've had a long journey then of different teachers and different explorations and reading at different venues until I got to the point where I felt I need to be really serious and get my professional membership. So that's me in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Well, it's not over yet. We're only 7 minutes into the interview, so I've got a few more questions. One of the questions I like to ask is, And it's sort of an open-ended question is, you know, what's your earliest memory of the esoteric and perhaps even knowing what tarot was? Did you, you know, did you have a friend when in high school, or where, how early on did it sort of start when you thought you were connected to this sort of path?
Only when I came to Australia. So it was obviously the reason I came here, because Ireland, I'm sure there are lots of tarot readers and psychics in Ireland, but I certainly had no exposure to them when I lived there. And it was Julie, this friend of mine, who kind of opened my eyes. She contacted me once to tell me that there was a man in her house and he was for me. And she knew I was a good Irish Catholic girl, but he wouldn't go away until she contacted me. And it was my father-in-law. And the message was so powerful and so relevant. And the language, which she wouldn't have known, the words he used in that, really, really touched me. And I started to explore after that, very gently, you know, toeing the water. And around the same time, my husband at the time asked for a tarot deck for Christmas. Being a Scorpio, he's kind of into that stuff. So I found a tarot deck in Meijer. I didn't even know about the Theosophical Bookshop or any of that. I found the Mythic Tarot in Meijer and I gave it to him, but he never really did anything with it. So I started exploring. So that was really, I was probably about 32 at the time. I'm now 69, almost 69. So that was the very early beginnings when I came to Australia.
Wow, that's an amazing, amazing story. But look, even as a child, did you ever have any sort of, I don't know, dreams or visions or anything like that that sort of made you think that this would be something you would pursue later in life? Like, did you have an interest in obviously history or anything like that to sort of give you an inclination?
No, because my family, as I said, very strictly Catholic and right, like mass every day type Catholic, my parents. Right. And the only thing I remember was I was often quite sick as a child because I had undiagnosed asthma. In those days, you know, asthma was a bit taboo. People didn't like to even label their child, but I would be sick for a few weeks in bed. And I definitely astral traveled. I remember that vividly. I wish I could do it now. I think as a child, you have a lot more of that connection with the other world, you know, and I astral traveled regularly. That was the only thing that was outside of my spiritual upbringing. My spiritual upbringing was very grounded in Catholicism. And I feel that coming to Australia allowed me to be more myself and to go within more and to find my own spirituality. And it's quite interesting because my mum was quite scared of the tarot and she didn't really like me read. She was fascinated and scared. But when we talked about spirituality, she really, one day she said to me, and this is a woman who said the rosary every day and went to mass all the time, I envy you, your spirituality. I envy you that you feel you can connect directly with God, which, you know, was her word. So she kind of could see that I was probably less religious and more spiritual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, look, I wanted to dig a bit deeper because, you know, astral travel is something that, you know, many people experience. I personally haven't experienced it, but as you said, when you're younger, you're more open and you don't have any preconceived notions of, you know, protection or putting up any boundaries. And as a child, you know, you're more innocent, and that's sort of obviously you're more susceptible to experiencing those sorts of things. So that's really quite fascinating. So in terms of your Celtic experiences and what you share with others and clients and things like that, so what do you actually impart with them as part of you? How do you integrate your Celtic wisdom as part of the tarot? Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Well, look, it's really just about who I am as a Celtic person. You know, I very strongly identify with my Celtic origins and I like to observe the Celtic feasts, you know. It's a bit upside down in Australia because, you know, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, but I still like to observe them and I still like to invoke Bridget, you know, as this wonderful, high-powered woman who was so ahead of her time in terms of her wisdom and her courage and her mastery. She was very much a leader of people and very spiritual. So I embodied that. You know, I'm like any other human being. When I go to do tarot readings, I get imposter syndrome, and I ask for help to give really true help to the people I'm working with. Yeah. And as soon as I get in with the person and start the cards, I'm in another zone. I'm very connected with my higher self, and any intuitive messages I get, I'm very clear with my clients when it's a spiritual message versus reading the cards. I explain to them that the cards have their own energy and their own story. And by shuffling and handling the cards, they're getting their energy on the deck, and they're choosing the cards, in effect, to tell a story for them. Mm. I go into a zone, definitely, and I call on my own inner wisdom or higher wisdom to help these people and try and stay humble throughout it all. Now, I don't go into any fancy Celtic language or anything. It's just who I am. I am Celtic.
Yeah, yeah. If you can cast your memory back to maybe when you first started reading tarot, do you have any advice for people who might be starting to read, and when they come across those first experiences, you know, and we've all had them as readers, where you, you'll have a client or you'll be at a market or something comes to you for a reading, and they've got some very, you know, serious issues in their life. I mean, not tarot wasn't always obviously, fun and games. And so as a reader, you know, we have to have that level of empathy and consideration for the person that we're reading for. Do you have any advice for people who might be starting out in tarot and maybe share an experience that you had once that you can remember that you'll just never forget? It was like, okay, this is what I'm in for kind of situation.
Yeah, look, I had one very humbling experience about 25 years ago. I started reading at home, and this girl came with a friend, and she was very troubled, and I could not get anything for her. I don't know whether it was I shouldn't have been reading that day, or she was closed or something, but it turned out that she had a child that died, and I didn't even pick the cards, or me, neither of us picked it up. And I found that very humbling and crushing. You know, it affected me in that I asked myself about the seriousness of what I was doing and how I really needed to be fully committed to this, because sometimes I was going to get situations where I wasn't able to help. What I find recently, I have no good ending to that story. She was blocked, I was blocked, I didn't help her, and it was very humbling, and it really made me think about reading, you know. Now, yeah. I still read, but I go into it with a very a consciousness that I may not get all the answers, and a humility to be able to talk to the client. What I find recently, I've been reading in a shopping center, in a retail environment, and I would get maybe like one day I had seven very sad women. Yeah. I'm talking about women who were disempowered, who were in relationships. I was getting the emperor in every reading, yeah, for the man in their lives. Yeah. And one of them in particular needed a refuge. And she was a Muslim lady. And she said she couldn't go to her own community, that they would force her to stay with her husband. And he had another woman in tow and all sorts of things. And all I could do her was give her crisis lines and encourage her to find a friend who could help, or to go to social services or legal aid, you know, because she was in a country where, you know, she was using a second language. Her community wasn't going to be supportive. And what I'm finding, I don't know whether it's the demographic or the, you know, where I'm reading, but an awful lot of women who are in relationships with men that they can't get out of, or feel disempowered, feel, you know, completely. So all I do with these women is really get into the cards with them, give them the guidance I can. And if there's no other way out, give them some practical advice about getting help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that that's a really positive approach, because there's obviously the fundamental, you know, esoteric meanings of the tarot cards themselves. And then obviously we're just using it as a tool, but you bring yourself to the reading as a reader or an empath, or however you consider your, you know, non-3D self to be. And, you know, especially women in particular, you know, we're talking with divine feminine spirit, and we're talking about, you know, empowerment, and people who are probably not equipped with the skill to be able to see outside of themselves and know that they have, you know, they have the drive if they can muster it, they have opportunity if they can seek help. But as you said, you know, there's only so much that the tarot can obviously offer in terms of spiritual guidance. And then we have to resort to obviously fundamental, you know, crisis lines and things like that, that can help them literally, you know, find a refuge or whatever it might be. And similar situations where we might be talking to women in cases of, you know, domestic violence and serious issues, which obviously as tarot readers, we're not qualified to give them that, you know, physical support. But it is a refuge for them, and a refuge in terms of being able to talk and a sense of counsel. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a non-biased, non-judgmental, confidential, you know, reprieve in a place that they can go where they can feel safe and possibly have some intervention. You know, we never know what's going to come through a reading either. So, yeah, it's a really tough job, and I think, but also extremely rewarding, and as you said, very humbling. And it's something that I'm also very passionate about, and I love talking to other readers as well. And as a professional member of the Guild, it's our responsibility to share these stories, I feel, and let people understand what we do. You know, potential enthusiasts and other people who want to progress into being a professional reader, what they're up for, and what it all really means, and how we can be of service.
Yeah, I agree. And you are a counsellor when you're a tarot reader, you know, and you have to be very mindful of language you use, words you use, and you have to make sure that you're giving them a strong supportive message as a woman as well. Mm. I find that I really can empathise strongly with these women. And it's ironic, you know, I can't tell you how many times the Emperor comes up. I'm never surprised anymore. And some women can acknowledge the Emperor in their partner, and some can't. Some are completely subdued in the relationship and feel that that's the nature of things, you know, depending on their cultural background. I mean, I had one girl who was pregnant and her partner broke it off with her, said he didn't love her anymore. And his mother rang her and said, "You have to abort the baby. It's my son's baby." You know, like, the kind of, I guess you go into tarot reading thinking people will ask you about their love lives or their career, and they do, they ask all those questions. You do not think you'll be at the coal face of family turbulence and pain and heartache to the level that I experience in this retail setting. I couldn't believe the number of cases of serious issues for people. They're not just coming for fun. So as a tarot reader, then you really have to be up for that and say, I can do this, and I'm willing to do anything I can to help them. And if I get to a point where anything I say is not going to be enough because of the dire situation, I will offer them practical help, you know, advice.
Do you think it's the setting, you know, the literally the location, like you were saying, I'm not sure if it's the demographic and all that sort of thing. Let's, you know, maybe think about it on a more broader scale. I think, you know, in the last 2 years with the big C happening and the pandemic, do you think it's a sign of the times more than ever? Do you think that's adding additional pressure to relationships and the expectation of males and females, and the pressure that they put on each other or the dynamic? Do you think that's affected things even more?
Well, look, without vilifying anyone, because that's the last thing I want to do. And one of the things I absolutely love about Australia is the diversity. And I know we have challenges in terms of racism and all that. And I absolutely love the multicultural diversity of Australia. And that's something we never had in Ireland. It was very, there were only Irish there when I was there. It's different now, of course. But when you have multicultural diversity, you also have traditions in marriage and in relationships where in a lot of cultures, the man is completely dominant and the woman is subdued. So if you have these women coming to a retail environment, like normally they wouldn't probably delve into tarot because of their religious background or whatever. And you have people that now have an opportunity because there's a tarot reader sitting there to explore that. You know, I really do think it's these cultures coming in, and you know, it'll take a few generations before things change, that the women are more empowered as they get more educated, and the younger women coming up are less likely to repeat their mother's scenario with, you know, if they have a dominant father, hopefully they're going to look for a freer relationship than that. So without sounding like I'm targeting any particular culture, I am finding that a lot of the women that come in are from cultures where men are dominant.
Right, okay. And that's a fair statement. On a lighter note, let's talk about the book that you had published. It's called Choose a Better You, and it's available on your website, danucelticmystery.com. Tell us a bit about the book and the illustrations and, what it was all about, because it looks like a beautiful book.
Oh, it's my baby. Thank you, Renee. I kept thinking about our mindsets and words, you know, and words we use as attacks on ourselves, and words that press our buttons in some way, you know, whatever connotation we have around these words. And if we can work with these words to get a better outcome for ourselves, like less negative self-talk and more exploring the meaning of the words and what implications they have in our lives, in our relationships and all that. So I allowed the words to come to me, if you know what I mean. And I knew when I was finished. You know, I don't know, I can't explain that to you, except the words came, I wrote about the words, and then I was finished. And I found Laurie Banks. Somebody mentioned her to me, and I Googled her, and I asked her to meet me. And we met in a coffee shop in Chapel Street, and I knew she was the one. She's an intuitive artist. Lord rest her, she has passed away. And in that first meeting, she told me she had stage 4 cancer. So my work for my book, the work she did for my book, was probably her last major piece of work. And I'm forever grateful to her because she used her intuition. She read the text and then she did the pictures. And I absolutely love them. That, you know, that they spoke to the text and they're just beautiful. It made my book a very lovely book.
That's gorgeous. And look, I think when you have that sort of connection, it's a, you know, it's literally this beautiful work of art that's, you know, indicative of life experience and, you know, people experiencing things like terminal illness. It can really connect on a level and provide that gift of working with you. And, you know, as you will probably know yourself, because I am not you and I didn't meet Laurie, that it was obviously meant to be. It was something that she could pass on to you as a gift in working with you. But the book itself, because we're actually speaking, I guess the listeners can't really understand what the book is per se. Is it just focusing on a particular word per chapter, or give us an example maybe of one of the chapters?
The first one is love, and it's about letting love in. It's about being vulnerable. You know, we all have experienced hurt in our lives, and we can put the walls up, but it's about loving unconditionally and loving yourself. and removing negative and limiting thoughts about yourself. You know, I am worthy, I'm a good person, I am lovable. And it's adopting that mindset, you know, to, you know, let love in. To do this, you must be vulnerable and brave. Let go of fear. What do you have to lose? Everything that is keeping you from experiencing love. And I find that when I'm reading for people as well who have had pain in relationships, that they put the wall up. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I don't want, you know. And I remind them that while they're living in that hurt, that the wall might keep more hurt out, but it also keeps love out. That we need to be vulnerable, you know. So that's one example. The one I suppose that was most emotive for me was the leave one, because I left my marriage after, I left in 2004 and I got married in 75. So we were a long time married and we're still friends. You know, we all that is good, but my life direction changed, and that leaving, it's so hard. You know, you have so much vested in your life, children, family expectations, friends expectations. It's unbelievable the reaction you get when you make a massive change in your life like that. And you definitely find out who your friends are. But we have to have courage. You know, we have to have the courage if we're in the wrong place. We have to have the courage to move, on. You can't live half a life. And you can't be on your deathbed knowing that you've wasted half your life because you didn't have the courage to make the change that was you were supposed to make, you know.
I think they're two really excellent examples from the book, because the love, starting with love, it's, you know, in a sense, when you're caught in a situation, and everybody does it from time to time, you know, you hear yourself with a bit of negative self-talk, you've got to sort of snap yourself out of it and go, hang on a minute, no, I can do this and I will do this. And you will, you talk to yourself in the affirmative, because when you do have negative self-talk, in a sense, you know, you're psychically blocking yourself. You're not allowing grace to come in. You're not allowing spirit to enter your world. You're sort of holding up the boundaries, as you said. And then the second part of that response with leaving, I don't want to get too personal because this isn't my podcast, this is yours. But it's making changes in your life is really important for you. And I think that's the operative word of your book as well, choose a better you, because it is about yourself, the ego, the I, the self. And working on the self is some of the, you know, people forget to work on themselves. People forget to care for themselves. You know, self-care is really important. Focusing on yourself is really important. It's not a selfish act. You know, it's one of those things where, yeah, there is judgment. And I think one of the key things you said as well is expectation of people around you, whether they be immediate family, friends, you know, socially. And people are afraid of that. They're always worried about what people are going to think. And, you know, so they stay doing what they're doing to sort of keep the peace. And it does take a lot of bravery. So I think that's a really important chapter in the book where you, you know, give people something to think about, because you only get one shot. And if you feel that you've given everything you can to a certain situation, and could be a marriage or even a job, yes, people want to change and they're afraid. And it's like, well, luck favors the prepared. Take a leap of faith like the fool. You know, and you never know what you can surprise yourself and actually live your best life. Because I think that's what it's all about, what we try and empower, you know, our clients and people, our friends, you know, live your best life. Don't live the life or half life, like you said.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And one of the books that I quoted in my book, and one of my books that is falling apart, I've read it so often, is The Dark Nights of the Soul by Thomas More. And in that really, I had a moment, you know, an aha moment. I was on a flight, I was on my way to Ireland actually, and between Melbourne and Singapore, I was in this dilemma about my current situation and needing, but, you know, lacking the courage. And I came to a part in his book where he said, when you come to a crossroads, there's only one reason you're at the crossroads, and that's to take the other road. And it was so simple. Like, yes. It was so simple. And the penny dropped.
Yeah.
And I made my decision in that moment. And then I weathered the storm. And of course, the storm settled and life is good now. I'm very happy in my current relationship. I have a good relationship with family, with friends. You do find out who your friends are, but that's okay. You know, that's part of life as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, friends, people pass in and out of your life when it, you know, their lives change, your life changes. I think when you're younger, you take it a little bit more to heart because you sort of think, well, hang on a minute, we're supposed to be friends forever. And sometimes friends are not forever. Sometimes they're in your time for a period for a reason. And then some people go off and have a family. Some people go off and travel. Some people, you know, it's all sorts of reasons why people come in and out of your life. And I totally agree with you. And I can also relate to that as well. So I understand what you're saying. One of the interesting things I love about tarot, and it's not for everyone, and I'm not sure if it's part of how you read either, is combining astrology with tarot. Do you have an interest in astrology, or do you reference that at all?
I love astrology. And, you know, I studied it for 2 years with a teacher called Sean McNamara. He was amazing.
Yeah.
And I know that 2 years is a dot in the ocean. So I know there's lots I don't know, but I do have, I even have professional tarot software to do charts. But I love it. I love to talk to people about their star sign, their, you know, I know it's only their sun sign, but it does help to work out, you know, who their partner is, who they are, where they look in the scheme of things and what lessons they have with each other. Mm. And I definitely incorporate it in my readings. It's kind of, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. And most people engage very well with that.
Yeah, I think it can be quite a natural progression as well, whether or not you put the stars before the cards or vice versa. I sort of grew up reading Linda Goodman's books, and you know, even before I was a teenager, sort of my mother had books and things like that on astrology and horoscopes and things, and I connected with it immediately. And then of course when you start learning tarot, you can also assimilate the different arcanas and the different cards with obviously planets and that sort of thing, their attributes that they have and they embody the archetypes. So it's just an interesting question because not all tarot readers do it, but I feel as well it's definitely, it sort of goes hand in hand in a way.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree, Renee. I don't know what I'd do without it. You know, it really helps you understand the person you're working with, the energies they have, and even explaining to them the cardinal, fixed, mutable, you know, how they might resist change, how they might embrace change, and how their partner is. Like I had one of the recent readings I did was with a woman who came in and she'd had 3 suicides in her life in the last 6 weeks or so. A work colleague, her husband's brother, and someone from the footy club. And she was very frustrated with her husband's, and she was kind of ready to move on. Now, she was an Aries, and he was a Gemini, I think, but he was dealing with deep grief about his brother, and he wasn't ready. You know, she felt that he wasn't moving fast enough in the grief cycle. Mm. And trying to explain to her how he might even struggle with, he might be, you know, in his head about it all with the air energy and the thoughts and all that. Mm. And he might be struggling to connect to his heart, you know, and that she needed to give him time. So, you know, it's interesting to even understand where they might be on the grief cycle journey and how we can jump forward and back. And then depending on, like even with me, my partner is a fixed sign Aquarius, and I'm Capricorn and I'm gung-ho, you know, I want to every new adventure. But my partner is like, hang on, I don't like, the funny thing is she's an expert in change, organizational change, and she's probably an expert because she doesn't like change very much. She's very resistant to change, so we laugh about that a lot, but it helps us understand the pace at which each of us goes and how we might have to wait for one another. Or pull what she might have to pull me back by the collar, you know, and say, hang on, I'm not ready.
Yeah,
so,
well,
yeah, I find it helpful.
Yeah, well, Capricorns can be, you know, they don't make any sudden movements, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing going on upstairs. They're planning every single step before they even, you know, hint at moving anywhere. But when they do move, they've planned everything out to the T.
Yeah.
They make sure that they're very well prepared. Oh, that's funny. So on your website, I'll just revert to that for a minute, you've got your tarot consultation, you're doing Zooms. Are you still conducting one-on-one tarot classes?
No, I'm not at the moment. I took time out this year because I find Zoom is, well, everyone will know this because they've had to do homeschooling with their children and everything, but we get Zoom fatigue so easily, and I'd much prefer the in-person. So right now I'm only focusing on reading, not on teaching.
Yeah, and you've also got a mention here of the use of the pendulum. It says, I incorporate the use of pendulum in both my consultation and classes to enrich my experience for clients, and it's a powerful tool that can be used on its own or with the tarot cards. Do you want to talk a bit about dowsing?
I love it. Yeah, I actually went to a lady, she presented at the Tarot Guild once, and I can't remember her name now. I know she lives in Carnegie, and she's part of the guild, the Dowsing Victoria Guild, you know, she's on the committee. And she ran some classes in her home. So I did the beginner's one, and then a week later I did the advanced one, and she gave me a lot of good material. You know, there's a guy in the US, videos, some reading material in that, and I just started. I always had a pendulum because even back to my heritage, I inherited this tiny little pendulum that my great aunt used to use on the farm to determine if the eggs were fertile. It's so old and it's rusty and it's on a little piece of string, but the day that the lady presented to the Tarot Guild, I brought it along to show her, and she was mesmerized, you know. But they used to do that in the farm, yeah, to check if the eggs were fertile. Anyway, I use it a lot, and even when I'm doing readings in the retail setting, when I have a break between readings, I clear the space using the pendulum to clear the energy over the cards, the space I'm in, and I bring in loving kindness, compassion, healing energy into the space for the next client. I question myself on, am I giving good readings? Am I focusing on, you know, I really want people to go away with a positive experience. And I use the pendulum a lot to check myself.
Mm. I've used the pendulum on and off for quite a few years, actually. And I always find it fascinating. I mean, for those who are not familiar with it, you can use it over a space or over a, you know, as you said, a deck of cards or what have you. But I usually used to just suspend it over one hand. So you're dangling it in one hand and you have your other hand flat palm underneath. And then you sort of wait for the, you know, for it to start swinging or circling. And look, I've watched quite a few videos on it. And when I sort of do it in front of people, I've brought it to, you know, a workspace or a college, or, you know, I'd have it in my pocket and I'd sort of show a friend and say, have you seen this before? And then I'd show them and they'd be like, you're moving your hand. And I said, no, I'm not. It's actually almost like a kinetic force that sort of shifts it. Mm-hmm. You know how it works. And then you would, so for example, oh, give me a go. Can I have a go? And they'll want to have a try, and you give it to them. And yet they will mimic the same thing. And I'll say, okay, well, hold it, you know, still and just wait. And for some people, it will just sit there and it actually won't move at all. If you understand what I'm sort of talking about, what's your opinion on that? And why does that happen? Because it's always sort of fascinated me how sometimes it works for some people and sometimes it works for others. Do you think it's something, yeah, that can be practiced?
Oh, I'd say as well as that, it's a belief, you know. Like, if you don't believe it's going to work, it's not going to, you know, you're not putting the energy in. Like when you or I do it, because we believe in it and we know what our S direction is, our no direction is. And I agree with you, I hold my hand very still and it moves, and if it doesn't want me to know, it won't move. So, you know, I will get the experience, generally it moves. Yeah. But if it doesn't, I'm not meant to know this right now.
It's almost like when it does swing and it rotates, you know, sometimes it can be very subtle and it'll just be like quite a small circular motion. And then if you let it go, well, this is what happens to me, you let it go, it can actually swing to the point where it's actually swinging it almost like a flat line around. Like it actually gets up quite high and it can actually circle almost like at 180 degrees, like a flat circle, which is really powerful. And I just think, how does it do that? It's really mystifying to me. I guess it's fascinating.
It's your energy, Renee. You know, you believe in it, you're focused, and it will do that for you. And I love when it does that. I love when it really, and you get a definite answer, you know. Yeah. But I just find it extremely powerful. I mean, I do have the dowsing things as well, you know, the, what do you call them, rods. Yeah. And I, you know, I bought them and I thought, oh, yes, I'm going to do this. I've never had the same connection with the rods as I have with the pendulum.
Yeah,
I love the pendulum and I always try and have one in my bag, you know.
Well, I'm glad I've had a chat with you about the pendulum because it's always nice to talk to others about the pendulum experience and enthusiasts. It's not as common as what one might think, but I do find it fascinating, as we do with most of the esoteric things that we like to dabble in. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Breed. I think, you're just such a wonderful person. And as I said, listening to your experiences today and getting to know you a bit better as a professional member as well, co-member, it's been wonderful. So I really appreciate your time.
Oh, Renee, it's been my pleasure. And I'm really honoured that you chose me. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best. Have a wonderful Christmas.
You too, Breed, and all the best with your readings. And if you'd like to reach out to Breed, I'll be leaving links in the description as part of the blog for this podcast. You can find Breed on her website and at her retail settings. There's upcoming events, connections on her website as well, where you can find her. And I'm sure that I can muster a Facebook connection or something as well. You might be able to find her on social media.
Yes, I'm on Facebook and Instagram.
Babo. All right. Well, thank you so much again, Breed. It's been a pleasure. And you too, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll see you again, hopefully soon in 2022, maybe face to face.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Thank you very much, Renee.
Lovely. Take care, Breed. If you'd like to be part of the Tarot Talk podcast on the Tarot Guild of Australia website, please get in touch with us. Our website is tarotguild.org.au. We'd love to hear from you. So until next month, stay safe, and thanks for listening.